continue in our study of Pirkei Avos, and we are in the first perek, Mishnah, just a few Mishnayos in, where we started the first half of the Mishnah last week. This week we're going to focus on the second half. Yoshua ben Prachya Omer. The great Tana Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya said, Asei l'charav. We spoke about that at length last week. Why is it important that we have a teacher? And why is it that Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, of all Tanaim, felt it necessary to teach us this lesson? He taught us, Asei l'charav, kenei l'chachaver. And number three, have a danas kal ha'adam l'kafsichus. We have to make sure that we judge others favorably. And that's really what we're going to focus on this week. Danas kal ha'adam l'kafsichus is something that I find to be a tremendous challenge in our generation. It could be it was a challenge in previous generations as well, but today, where we have the ability to read so much about other people, and we're on social media, and we're on the blogs, and we read things, and we judge others by that which we see or that which we interpret, it is so important that we spend a little bit of time just reminding ourselves that you need to take a step back every once in a while and appreciate there might be another perspective. There might be another way to look at this, and there might be another reality that is different from the reality that might be written in the papers or might be written on the blogs or posted on social media. And we need to be extremely careful that we are not so quick to judge. So much so that the Gemara says in Maseches Shavuos Daf Nun, that this is actually learned from a pasuk in the Torah. The Torah says, "Betzedek tishpot amisecha." And there, the Gemara learns. We learn from that pasuk that it teaches us, "Haveidan es chavercha lekafsechus." Betzedek tishpot amisecha means you need to give people the benefit of the doubt when interacting with them. And in fact, the Rambam and the Sefer Achinuch and Rabbeinu Yonah all understand that this is a biblical obligation. This is a mitzvah midaraisa like all others. So we know we need to keep Shabbos and we need to keep Kashrus and all the other things. One of those mitzvos is actually Bitzedek Tishpot Amisecha, and it is something that we need to think about and remind ourselves of every so often. So the Gemara goes so far as to say in Maseches Shabbos that we have a short list. Now some of these might be familiar to us from our tefillah in the morning. Elu dvarim shadam ochel peruseyem ba'olam hazeh, va'akeren kayemes lo li'olam haba. The Gemara gives us a short list of things that if we are involved in these acts and these mitzvos, we will have not only reward in the world to come, but we will have schar even in olam hazeh. And what is on that short list? Some of them we know from davening, but some of them do not appear in our siddur. So listen carefully to what the Gemara says. Shisha dvarim. There are six different things that if a person is involved in these activities, Adam ochel peruseyem ba'olam hazeh, va'akeren kayemes lo li'olam haba. Here's the list. Number one, hachnasas archim. If you're engaged in the mitzvah of hachnasas archim. Number two, bikur cholim. Number three, iyun tfila. Number four, hashkamas beis hamedrish, that you go to shul. Hamagadel banav l'talmud Torah. This does not appear in our siddur, but that's the way the Gemara says it. Somebody who invests in their children having a Jewish education. And number six, says the Gemara, is hadan es chaver l'kaf zechus. It's one of six choice mitzvos that is singled out here, where if a person is careful to be done es chaver l'kaf zechus, it is peroseyem ba'olam haba and ba'olam hazeh. Which means that this is something that the Ribono Shel Olam considers to be at a high premium. It is something that he appreciates very much, and therefore the reward for one who is careful about this is going to be very great. So there's a story that is mentioned in a number of different sources about the great Rabbi Aryeh Levin. Rabbi Aryeh Levin was the famous tzaddik of Yerushalayim. And on the corner of Strauss, and I don't remember what the cross street is there, where Bikur Cholim Hospital is in Yerushalayim. Strauss and Hanaviyim, is that what it is? So over there, there was a elderly Yerushalmi gentleman who passed away. He was very sick for a while. He passed away, and they had a levaya right outside of the hospital. They had a levaya, and they were going to continue on from the levaya that they had there. They were going to continue on to the Beis HaKvaros in Sanhedria. So Rabbi Aryeh Levin came. It was a Friday afternoon when they had the funeral, and he showed up to the levaya, and right after the first speaker finished talking, Rabbi Aryeh Levin quickly walked away from the whole assembly there. And there was a flower shop right down the block. He walks into the flower shop, and 5 minutes later he comes back with a vase in his hand and a bag over the vase. And it was a little bit strange. It was a little bit strange, but he didn't say anything. 2 weeks went by, and one of his friends bumps into him. I don't know if it was at a simcha or in shul. And he says, "You know, I was standing next to you at that funeral a few weeks ago, and I thought it was very strange. I understand that it was a Friday afternoon, and I understand your wife asked you to get flowers for Shabbos, but in the middle of a funeral? That's what you're in the middle of doing? While everyone is sitting and crying over this loss, over this tragedy, you're going to the flower shop to take care of your Shabbos errands? It just seems to be so inappropriate. And then you come back to the funeral, holding the flowers in your hand with a bag over it? I mean, does this make sense? So Rabbi Aryeh Levine said, you know, I'm very happy that you raised the issue to me, and I'm happy that I'm given the opportunity to explain myself. And he said as follows. After I heard the first speaker talk about the person who passed away, I learned something about his illness that I never knew. I never knew that he had a highly contagious illness. And the rule in the hospital is, from all the times I visited in Bikur Cholim Hospital, I know that the law is, when somebody passes away from this illness, they burn all of the contents that were in that person's room. Because they're afraid of infection, they're afraid of somebody else getting sick from it. So they burn all of the contents that were in the room of this patient. I don't know, do we have such a thing today? Do they do that? No, I assume not. But this was probably 50, 60 years ago. What? Right, but after the person is no longer there, I assume they just figure out how to clean the room, sanitize it. So anyway, Rabbi Aryeh Levine said, that is what the protocol of the hospital was. They used to burn all the sheets and everything else. Along with one of those contents would be this man's tefillin. Tefillin. He put on tefillin every day, and the hospital would burn it along with everything else. And Rabbi Aryeh Levine said, after I heard the first hesped, I realized something needs to be done. So I went quickly to the flower shop across the street and I asked them, do you have the phone number of the hospital? I'm in the middle of a funeral here, but I'd like to know, is there any way that I can call the hospital and negotiate with them about the tefillin before they burn them? They said, sure, their hospital is our next door neighbor. He calls up the hospital from the flower shop and he says, this is Aryeh Levine. I happen to be present at a funeral. I know that this man had whatever given illness it was. And I assume you're going to burn his tefillin. They said, of course we're going to. He said, is there any way I can negotiate that that should not be done? So they said, look, if you're willing to come into the hospital, put the tefillin into something, into a case, and cover it over with a casing on top, and then bury it with this man, he says, we'll be willing to give it to you as long as you take responsibility for it. So he said, I happen to be in the flower shop across the street. They said, get a vase with a bag on top, come into the hospital, put the tefillin in, and then you'll bring it to the Beis HaKvaros and you'll bury it with this man. An amazing story. And Rabbi Aryeh Levine said he learned from this experience how careful we need to be. How many of us who would have been at that funeral would have learned would have looked at a person like this and said, how insensitive. You stand at a funeral. You leave for a couple of minutes thinking no one's going to see you. You go quickly to buy the flowers that you needed for Shabbos. Then you come back holding these flowers. Does this make sense? Is this a way that you're supposed to act when attending a funeral? And Rabbi Aryeh Levine said he learned from that encounter, from that experience that he had, how careful we need to be, even when something looks so obvious to us. You never know what perspective you really are supposed to be having on what you see in front of you. It is the reality, but you really don't understand the context of what it is that you're seeing. And therefore, he said he was so happy that he had the opportunity to explain himself, but he was also happy that it happened. Because he had the opportunity to think about how often he looks at others and he's so quick to judge them before he has an opportunity to clarify what it is that he's seeing with his own eyes. The Gemara in Maseches Shabbos goes even further and tells us about Moshe Rabbeinu. And here the Gemara says, if you look at number Beis, Amar Reish Lakish, Hachoshed Biksherim. Somebody who mistakenly accuses another person of doing something wrong, writes the Gemara, Loke Begufo. You will be punished for that. God will actually punish you for doing that. Dichsiv, how do we know that is true? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was asked to go and save the Jewish people from Egypt, so he gives every excuse in the book, and he tries to get himself out of this responsibility because of his humility. And he feels, Lo ish devar manochi, I'm not the right person, I'm the wrong candidate, I don't know how to negotiate well, I'm not a politician, it's just not for me. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, you're going to go. Last attempt, to try to get himself out, what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Hein lo ya'aminu li. You know what? I'm happy to go, but they're not going to believe me. There's no reason to send me because there's no way that the Jewish community will actually trust that I had an interaction from God Himself and that I have instruction from God Himself to come and speak to them and redeem them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, really? V'galya kame kutcher b'yichu d'mehemni Yisrael. God says, I know these people. Of course they're going to believe you. How dare you say that they won't? And because of that, says the Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu laka begufo, because he accused the Jewish people of something which simply was not true. He accused them of something that he had no evidence to back his claim up with. Because of that, says the Gemara, laka begufo, Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know in that parsha, gets taras on his hand. Says the Gemara, it's a direct result of the accusation that he hurled against the Jewish people for what he said. And the Gemara says we need to learn from there how careful one has to be when they judge others and when they view what it is that others are involved in. Don't be so quick to think you understand and to pass judgment on that individual. When the Chafetz Chaim speaks about being down the Kapsachus, we're going to read a few pieces from the Chafetz Chaim today. All of them are extremely important, but here the Chafetz Chaim writes a critical lesson, and that is, generally in the Shmiras HaLashon, the Chafetz Chaim talks about Lashon Hara. And the Chafetz Chaim there really has a masterpiece that nobody else before him had ever studied about what are the actual laws, what are the parameters of Lashon Hara. How are we supposed to speak and how perhaps are we not? But here writes the Chafetz Chaim, one needs to be so careful because when we talk about being dan adam lekaf sechus, when we talk about judging others favorably and being generous in the way that we look at whatever it is that they do, says the Chafetz Chaim, that too could be a component to Lashon Hara as well. How so? You watch what somebody does, and you internalize it the way you understand it. Then the next day, somebody talks to you about wanting to get in a business deal with this human being, with this person, and you say, not so sure. I know what I saw yesterday, and without knowing the context, and without clarifying or understanding, you have already decided on your own how you judge that person and how you view them, based on your understanding, on your purview, on your context. And therefore writes the Chafetz Chaim, how often can this lead to a person ultimately spreading Lashon Hara about somebody? Well, by the way, Lashon Hara applies even if it's true, but certainly if it's not true, says the Chafetz Chaim, it is so easy to allow our perception and our understanding, our impression of a person, or our opinion that we may have drawn based on something that we saw, because we weren't dan on lekaf zchus, and later it can lead to something worse. So that's the first Chafetz Chaim. Look at the second paragraph in the Chafetz Chaim where he says, Vida, tikashem shekasavnu b'shem haposkim dimin haTorah aser lahamin divrei genus. The same way that we are not allowed to believe when others tell us something negative about another person, shemisaprin al chavrehem, kein hadin, says the Chafetz Chaim, the same applies, afilu im yodea shehadvarim shesiper lo hu emes. Even if you know that what the other person is telling you is true, ach yesh b'hem litzadei lekan ulekan, but there's a way to interpret this story that perhaps it wasn't as bad as you may have thought. V'hamisaper lo danoso lekaf chov, and you choose, instead of doing that, you choose to interpret it in the negative way. Says the Chafetz Chaim, you are in violation of b'tzedek tishpot amisecha, like the Gemara says. And then look at the last line he says, that when we do this, he says, it can lead to so much worse. Kivan da al yidei shalodan osa lekaf zchus melmela nishtarvev alav divrei hagnus. Because you decided to draw an impression and to paint a picture of what you think this person is like based on what you've seen on the surface. Now because of that, the ripple effects can be so consequential and can be so dangerous. And writes the Chafetz Chaim, it's something everyone needs to be careful about. And I think about it so often. If you ever read a blog and you see somebody comment something negative, all you need is that first person. And from there, the ball starts rolling. One negative person who paints a picture of what it is that the article said or didn't say. And from there, everyone just feels they have a license. From there, it continues. And do I blame all the people who come afterward? Probably not. It's all the fault of that first person. Because once they gave their opinion, once they shared their perspective and quoted it as if it's absolute, after that, you know how devastating the consequences can be and how many people will just follow along with that opinion that was already painted that wasn't true in the first place. Let's learn together another Chafetz Chaim, where he adds a critical point to this discussion of being done as Chaver Lekaf Zechus. Now here the Chafetz Chaim tries to explain to us why it's so important. And he says, number one, what does it mean to be done a person Lekaf Zechus? He says it means you see something that happened, and you know that your eyes are not failing you, and you know that you've actually seen something that seems to be a problem, says the Chafetz Chaim, in a situation like that, what should a person do? And we all see it all the time. What am I supposed to do? Naively live life and assume that everyone's doing the right thing? No. Says the Chafetz Chaim, we'll get back to that point a little bit later, just keep that in mind. But writes the Chafetz Chaim, first, what a person should do is they should think, maybe yes, this person does seem to have done something terribly wrong, but maybe they didn't understand how wrong it was. That's number one. Maybe they didn't understand how bad it was, the action that they were involved in. Or he says, one should think to themselves, maybe they were under tremendous distress. Maybe there was something, and again, that's not to excuse negative behavior. And it's not to allow ourselves to fall into such negative behavior. But says the Chafetz Chaim, one should think every once in a while about the pressures that led a person to do whatever it is that he did. And think about it from the other person's perspective. Do you really think that they would want to be living a life violating these averas, doing these things wrong? Says the Chafetz Chaim, more often than not, the answer is no. And there are just so many different things that are behind it. When you understand the context, says the Chafetz Chaim, that's what it means to be danas chaver lekapsuchus. Look at the next paragraph, the long paragraph in the Chafetz Chaim that starts with the word lech na, where he writes the following, and this is an amazing exchange that the Gemara has. But before we get to that, the Chafetz Chaim says we also need to be careful. While we are danas chaver lekapsuchus, if you don't have the ability to at least do that, says the Chafetz Chaim, at least be careful that when you share a story that you've seen another person involved with, at least be careful that you say it over accurately and you don't exaggerate or embellish the facts. Now, how often do we see that just adding in your little perception, adding in one small detail, you know, two people have a conversation and you overhear and you emphasize one side over the other, or you say something emphatically that really was not said with such fervor. When two people are talking to each other, they weren't fighting. But when you repeat the conversation to someone else, you repeat it just slightly differently from the way it was said. You add one word here, one word there, says the Chafetz Chaim. Do you know what that leads to? Do you know how dangerous that is? So at least, he writes, if you can't find within yourself to be danas chaver lekapsuchus, at least make sure that you report information accurately. And don't put your own feelings or your own emotions or your own details to the story into what actually happened. Because sometimes, he says, that can make something be so much worse than it actually was had you been standing there at the time when it happened. Now let's read what the Chafetz Chaim says, where he shares with us an amazing story from the Gemara Maseches Shabbos. Lech na re'ei b'maisa de Shabbos. Let's learn together, says the Chafetz Chaim, a story in the Gemara Maseches Shabbos, kuf chav zayin amid beis. Mimena yilmad ha'adam ha'yashar. And from here, an honest person who is open to understanding will learn shetzarach ladin as chaver lekapsuchus afilu im ofen haschus hu hayoseh rachok. Even in a situation where it seems so unlikely that this is actually what happened, says the Chafetz Chaim, let us make sure that we are dan lekapsuchus even in those kinds of circumstances. Let's read the story together. V'zeh l'shon ha'gemara sham. Tana Rabbanan says the Gemara, Hadan Chaber Lekapsuchus, somebody who has the ability to judge others favorably and to be gracious with the way that they interpret that which they see in their friends. Dana Nosol Eschus, says the Gemara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay you back, and he too will be Dan Yu Lekapsuchus. So listen to the story that the Gemara has. Umaisa Ba'adam Echad Sheyarad Megalil Ha'elyon. There was a Jew, a poor man who lived in the Galil. Welcome. How are you? So there was a Jew who lived in the Galil. V'niskar etzal balabayis, echad bedarom shaloshanim. There was a rich man who lived in the Darom. And this man understood, I have to hire myself out for work. I have no money. I can't support my family. So he says, we'll make a deal. I'll come work by you for the next 3 years. You'll pay me X amount of dollars, whatever it is, and then I'll be okay for the next little while. He goes down, he travels away from home. After the 3 years, Erev Yom HaKippur Mamarlo, he says, it's Erev Yom Kippur, I got to go home for Sukkot. I haven't been home in years. And I've done so much work for you. So he says, Amarlo, he goes to his employee and he says, his employer, and he says, Tein li schari, ve'elach ve'ezen asishti ubnei. It's time for me to go back to my family and to bring back some of the money that I've worked so hard to earn. Amarlo, he says, I'm sorry, ain li mos. I feel terrible. You've been a great worker, but I have no money. Have no money? You have butlers running around the house, and you have maids all over the place, and you have this huge estate. You have no money? He doesn't ask any questions. Amarlo, he says, okay, you have no money. Tainli peiros. Do me a favor. Give me some fruit. I see we have buckets and baskets full of fruit outside, new produce outside. Just let me take those buckets home. At least I'll be able to sell those. I'll make money from that. Amarlo, ainli. I don't have any fruit. You don't have any fruit? I'm looking out the window and I see what you have outside there. He doesn't ask any questions. Tainli behema. You don't have money, you don't have any produce. At least give me some of your cattle. Give me some animals that I can take home. Ainli. I don't have any. Really, but both of us see outside you have a whole barn full of animals. He doesn't ask a question. Karamuksasas, he says, do me a favor, give me something. Your house is filled with furniture, all the beds and the mattresses and all the tables and everything. Give me something that I can take home, that I can sell in the market and at least I'll make money from. Ainli. I don't have anything. Hishbil Caleb the Achorav, he takes his little satchel on his back. Bahalach lebeso bepachi nefesh. Can you imagine? The man's been away from home for 3 years. He finally wants to come home and support his family that hasn't seen him in so long. And all of a sudden, his employer says, I have nothing to pay you with. Sorry. La'achar haregel, after Sukkos, Nalto balabai secharo, the employer puts himself on a wagon. Ve'imo masui shlosha chamorim. And he loads up, thank you, he loads up three wagon loads full of stuff. One of them was filled with maichel, one of them was filled with mishta, ve'echad shalmini megadim. So he takes all the salary, and he takes three donkey loads full of produce and everything one could ever imagine, and he goes and he travels to this poor man's house in the Galil. This man is shocked. He wakes up in the morning and he sees, right after Sukkos, look who it is, the man who I never wanted to see again. He cheated me. So he invites him into his house, and after they get in a brief conversation, he hands him all the salary that he owed him. And then he says, okay, let's talk business. Amarlo. B'shasha amarta tein li schari, when you asked me to pay you, v'amarti and I responded, ein li mos. B'amech hashadatani, what were you thinking? You didn't ask a question. You just said, do you have money to pay me? I said, I have no money. Didn't you suspect? Maybe I'm lying to you. Amarti, he said, I said to myself, Shema prakmati bezol nizdamna lecha v'lakachta bahem. I thought, maybe a great investment just came up, and you needed some quick cash, so you took all the money in your house and you gave it toward the investment. That's what I assumed. Uveshasha amarteli, and when you asked me, Tainli behema, you said, okay, you have no money, so give me cattle. Ve'amarti, and I said, Eini behema. I said, I'm sorry, I don't have any. And you looked out the window and you saw all of the cattle in my field. Bameh chashadatani, what did you think then? Did you not suspect that I was lying? Amarti, I said, Shema maskeres bi'al acherim. Maybe you rented out the animals for other people to do work with, and it really didn't belong to you. You weren't able to give them to me. Uveshasha amarti li, and when you asked me, Tainli karka, you asked me to give you a piece of property. Ve'amarti lecha, and I said, Ainli karka. And you're looking at my huge estate and my house and everything I have, and I said to you, I have no property to give you. Bamecha shadatani, what did you think then? Amarti, I said, Shema machkeres bi'anachayrimi. Maybe you have sharecroppers who are equal partners with you, and really they own the business together along with you, and you don't have a right to sell off your share without their permission. Uveshasha amarti lecha, you getting the point yet? Uveshasha amarti lecha inli peiros. And when I said, I don't have any fruits, Bamecha shadatani amarti, I said, Shema enon muusaris. Maybe you didn't yet take chumas amaisers off of the fruits, and therefore they don't yet belong to you. You can't give them to me. Uveshasha amarti lecha, when I said, Ainli karamuksasos, come on. You had an excuse for everything, but when you asked me for the beds in my house, when you asked me for the furniture, Bamecha shadatani, what did you think then when I said, I have no beds? Come on, you just woke up. What happened to your bed? Amarti, I said to myself, Shema hikdish kol nechasav lashamayim. Maybe you just woke up this morning and you decided you're going to dedicate all of your property to the Beis HaMikdash. Crazy. Who would ever do that? Who would donate their beds and their car and all their furniture to the Beis HaMikdash? Why would someone do that? But he says, that's what I thought. Maybe that's what happened. Amar lo, he said to him, I want you to know ha'avoda kahu. I want you to know that is exactly what happened. How so? Hedarti kol nechasai b'shvil hurkunis b'ni shelo asek v'torah. I have a troubled teenager, he said, who wasn't doing well in school, and he was afraid that because his son saw that the father had so much money, he decided he could cut corners in school. Because one day I'll be rich anyway. What do I need this for? My son wasn't learning well, and I said, such a wise guy, guess what? There's going to be nothing left for you. Because I'm giving all of my property to the Beis HaMikdash. None of it's going to be yours. And I thought that my son would buckle down once he saw how serious I was. So I decided, I woke up that morning, I told my son, I've had enough. You kicked out of school too many times. I'm going to give all of my property to the Beis HaMikdash. We're not going to have to worry about this problem. You'll have to make it on your own. Happens to be that day you came to me and you said, I want to get paid. And I happen to have had nothing to my name, because it all belonged to the Ribono Shel Olam. Ukeshebasi Eitzel Chaveri Shebedarom. Then he says, I walked into the Beis Medrash and I discussed what happened with my friends. They said, are you out of your mind? You give away all of your property to the Beis HaMikdash? Hitiwilu Kol Nedara, he said, they did a Hataras Nedarim, and now, I now once again own all of my property. So now I've come to pay you everything that I owe you, and more. Ve'ata, says the Gemara, and you, Kishem Shadantani L'Schus, the same way that you found the generosity of spirit to be nice enough and gracious enough to give me the benefit of the doubt, even though it made no sense. You were looking around, you've been working in my house for 3 years, you see the way I live. And yet you took my word and you did not suspect that I was lying, and you were able to figure out how it could be that maybe I actually was not cheating you. I hope, he says, Hamakum yadin oscha l'schus. I hope that in return God could find the generosity of spirit to be kind and gracious to you as well. And then the Chafetz Chaim goes on. Chafetz Chaim then writes, if we would live a life, that's the story that the Gemara tells. But the Chafetz Chaim says, imagine if we would live a life that was all based on Midas Hadin. Every time a person did something wrong, you would get struck by lightning and that was the end of you. We wouldn't be able to survive. There would be no life. It would be impossible. And our world, as we know, he says, is based on Midas HaRachamim. Kel Melech Yoshev Al Kisei Rachamim, Misnaig B'Chasidus, Mochel Avon Ozamo. God allows us for mercy. And says the Chafetz Chaim, and I say this every year around Rosh Hashanah time, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. You know, people will go to such great lengths before the Yom Noraim for every skula and every superstition and to get every bracha and every kever, and all, it's all wonderful. Maybe some of it, I don't know. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. But you know, I always think about it. So you're going to wear this article of clothing in order to be a skula for that. And you're going to do this, and you're going to say that tefillah at exactly this time for 40 days and go to that kever. Why don't we think about what the Gemara says? Kala merachem ala brios, merachemim alav min hashamayim. It comes to the Yom Noraim, and we all are looking for mercy. And the Gemara gives us the answer. The Gemara says, you want the Ribono Shel Olam to treat you with mercy and benevolence and compassion? Be merachem ala brios, be understanding of other people. Don't be so quick to destroy other people. And here that's what the Gemara says. You want that the Ribono Shel Olam should be done, you lekap zechus. You want that when the Ribono Shel Olam looks through all the things that you're involved in every day, and we all make mistakes, but you want that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should understand where I was coming from. You want that the Ribono Shel Olam should say, you know, he had a lot of pressures, and there were many things that led them to do this wrong thing. Maybe it was their friends, maybe it was their spouse, maybe it was their children, maybe it was financials, maybe it was all a million and one reasons you can have for why we do things wrong. And says the Gemara, if you want that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should allow your cheshbon with him, your account with him, to be something where he's able to overlook certain things, and where he's able to just have a generous and kind spirit toward whatever it is that you're doing, says the Gemara, the trick to that is, learn how to do it for others. Learn how to do that for others. and learn how to just be favorable to other human beings, be a little bit more compassionate. Be a little bit more forgiving of people. And understand that not everybody in the world does everything because they want to do it. Sometimes people do things because all different forces of nature might push them to do something that you see as being wrong. Be a little bit more accepting and understanding for what it is that other people might be doing. And in return, says the Gemara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will think the same as you. When he goes through all that you do, and when he goes through all the decisions that you've made, and all the poor decisions that we've all made, says the Gemara, he looks to see how it is that you look upon others. Look at the next entry on the second side of the sheet, which is the Bar Dichever and the Kedushas Levi. And there the Bar Dichever writes something in the name of the Baal Shem Tov, and it's a very important statement. We've all said so many times, Shir HaMalos Asai Naya Leharim, right? We say the Shir HaMalos and we daven when something's wrong. Shir HaMalos Mima Makim. And in one of those psukim we say, Hashem Tzilcha Al Yad Yeminecha. Simply translated, I think most of us would understand that that means, I can always find a place where I feel I'm in the shade of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When life gets rough and things are difficult and I don't know what's going to be, I always feel I'm in the shade of the Ribono Shel Olam. That's what a Maamin is supposed to feel at times of tragedy, at times of great distress. It's not easy, but that's what we say, Hashem Tzilcha, God will always be your shadow. Writes the Baal Shem Tov, it means something so much more profound than that. And it's quoted in the Kedushas Levi, let's see what he writes. Kemoshe hevesi le'el v'shem ha-Baal Shem Tov, Hashem Tzilcha. What does it mean that God is your shadow? Kemoshe hatzel ose masha adam ose. It means that God is my shadow, not that I'm sitting and basking in His glory, but that He is deciding how to run my life based on the way I run my own life. So the same way when I'm out in the middle of the night and I see my shadow, every time I move my hand, the shadow also moves its hand. And when I pick up my finger and I wave, the shadow would also wave at me. And when I move one step and I move my leg or I do anything, the shadow is always doing exactly what it is that I do. Says the Baal Shem Tov, that's what it means, Hashem Tzilcha. The Ribono Shel Olam looks at the way we interact with others, and He is our shadow. You move a hand, I'll also move a hand. You decide to think about other people favorably, and you decide to give them the benefit of the doubt when there's something that they may have done wrong, writes the Baal Shem Tov, Hashem Tzilcha. The Ribono Shel Olam will do the same. I think it's a profound insight. Let's read it together. It says the Kedushas Levi, Kimo Shehatzel Ose Masha Adam Ose. Just as a person's individual shadow does exactly what the person, him or herself, actually does, kach kavayachol, so too when it comes to God's way of leading His life with us. Kimosha adam misnag lamata, kach misnagim oso milamala. The same way that we treat others in our world is the way that the Ribono Shel Olam will react and respond and treat us as well. Lachain, im misnag b'midas harachamim. If you have learned in life how to be compassionate, how to be benevolent, how to be someone who's understanding and forgiving of others, and all of us make mistakes, let's be real. You read an article in the paper about someone who did something wrong and immediately everyone's jumping on them and talking about it. And I'm not saying we should be forgiving of them. They did something wrong, they should be punished. But think for a minute about if it was you. Think for a minute about the circumstances that person's family is in. What did their children do wrong? So somebody may have been dishonest in their business, and because of that they were arrested, and it was a tremendous chilul Hashem and a terrible thing, and I agree with all of that. What did their children do wrong? Have you ever met with children whose father is sitting in jail? Well, I have. And they've done nothing wrong. And what kills them more than anything else, yet, is a very unfair thing to say. I'm sorry. I have to say that publicly. It's very unfair. Because children deserve a chance, like every human being deserves a chance. And just because their parent might be dishonest, it doesn't mean anything. We've seen many wonderful people who have come out of very highly dysfunctional homes. It's an unfair comment to say. But something that kills these people more than anything else, besides the fact that they no longer have a functional family or a parent who should have been there to raise them, aside from that, is the fact that they feel the community has taken it out against them. And they've suffered more humiliation than they are deserving of. And it's unfair. and says the Kedushas Levi in the name of the Baal Shem Tov, if you can find a place in your heart to just be sensitive and be mindful and be compassionate and think about the context of whatever it is that you're about to open your mouth about, says the Baal Shem Tov, Hashem Tzilcha, the Ribono Shel Olam, will do the same. Don't be so quick to say things about other people. And the Ribono Shel Olam won't be so quick to say things about you. And that is the greatest Eitzah we can have. Yom Noraim, running around, every kever, every school, this is the greatest school of them all. The Gemara assures us that this is the answer. The Ribono Shel Olam will work based on the way he sees that we work with others. And the Baal Shem Tov himself writes a very similar idea if you look in the next passage, where the Baal Shem Tov there tells us the story about Nasan HaNavi and David HaMelech. And there the Gemara tells us, I'm sorry, the Psukim in Tanakh tell us that Nasan was a Navi, he was a prophet, and he comes to have a very open conversation with David HaMelech. So David HaMelech wakes up one day and he sees Nasan comes to talk to him and he's so excited, the Navi came to visit me, and the Navi says, you know, I was thinking about something, I'm just curious what you thought. Let me share a story that's been percolating in my mind. I'm just curious about your perspectives. Well, for anybody that knows the story, what happened? Nasan HaNavi comes along. Let's read it together. Kasher ba Nasan HaNavi lo'ochiach es David HaMelech. And what does he do? How does he go about having this conversation with David? He says, Pasach v'yomer lo v'derech mashal. Shnei anashim hayu bi'ir achas. Echad rosh ve'echad ashir. There were two people who lived in a city. One of them was known to be very wealthy, and one of them was known to be destitute. He was poor. La'ashir hayatzonu bakar har b'miyod. The rich man had so much wealth, and he had so much plenty in his life. Ularash ein kol kiim kivsa achas ketana asherkana. And the poor man, what did he have to his name? All he had was this one sheep, and nothing else. He didn't have a house. He was a homeless. He used to go around with his sheep, and that was it. Vayavo HaMelech, and one fine day, the king comes into the town, and as he's walking around the town, he realizes it's time for lunch. So I need something to eat. So he has two options. He can either go to the rich man's house and take one of the sheep from the thousands that he'll find there in the barn, or he can go to the poor man and take the only one piece of asset that he has in the world. I don't know if you call that an asset, but the only acquisition that he's ever made in his life. So, what happens? Nasan says that the king goes ahead and he decides to rob the poor man of his one sheep that he has. Now, it would seem to be unfair. He asks David HaMelech, what do you think about that? How do you understand that? Do you think that the king did the right thing or the wrong thing? Was that justified or was that perhaps inappropriate? David HaMelech says, Ben Mavis Haisha Usazos. That's awful. Why would he destroy someone's life? The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. That makes no sense. And David HaMelech says back to Nasan HaNavi, if I would have been in that situation, I certainly would have made sure to take one sheep from the rich man. It wouldn't make a difference to his life. And Nasan turns back to him and he said, well, that was you. Well, that was you. And I know it's easier to hear it about someone else, but let me remind you about what you had just done with the story of Bathsheba. He sent away the husband, the whole story, we don't have to get into it, but he says to David HaMelech, that was you. Says the Baal Shem Tov, this is exactly the way the Ribono Shel Olam will show us how we are going to be dealt with for every mistake in our own lives. The Ribono Shel Olam will present us with a situation where he'll show us somebody doing exactly the same thing wrong that we had done. And he's going to watch how we react, how we respond to that person. And like the Baal Shem Tov writes, Charatz Eifo Es Din Atzmo. David HaMelech, so to speak, dug his own grave. That's the way we would say it today. You dug your own grave. I showed you the scenario. A rational person understands that this is unacceptable. And because it's unacceptable, God says, well, therefore, what you did is unacceptable because this is an exact parallel. Writes the Baal Shem Tov, that's exactly the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to deal with every one of us. You made a mistake, you did something wrong, that's okay. Not that we should be okay with mistakes, but we all, unfortunately, ain't tzadik baratz asher yasa tova lo yechta. Everybody makes a mistake at some point. But the question is, how do we view others who make mistakes? And the Ribono Shel Olam says, I'm going to allow you to dig your own grave, or to be favorable unto others, and therefore I will be favorable unto you when you make that very same mistake. It's a powerful comment of the Baal Shem Tov. It's a tall order, but it's important for all of us. And it will only come to help all of us. And writes the Baal Shem Tov, that's what it means, Hashem Tzilcha. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that's what the Gemara means when it says, Kol Adon es Chaveru Lekav Zechus, Min HaShamayim, Yadun Oso Lekav Zechus as well. The Ribbono Shel Olam will act with you the very same, if you can figure out a place in your heart to be open and understanding, to be generous and positive with the way that you see other people interacting with you in their lives. Now let me just make two comments before we end the shiur. 15 minutes, I hope I can get this in. Two comments that I think are very important. When we talk about being Danas Chaver Lekav Zechus, and there was great confusion last night when I said this part, so let me just preface it. If anyone's confused, please speak up. I think what we've spoken about till now is something that, for many of us, at least for me, is extremely difficult and almost unrealistic. Come on, I see somebody doing things wrong, but I'm going to really come up and rationalize and assume that everything's right. It's a very difficult thing to do. So let us just humanize it a little bit. Let us just tone it down a little. So a number of years ago, I was talking to Rav Asher Weiss about one of these Gemaras. And in conversation, he mentioned something to me, which I think is such a critical component to this whole discussion. And it makes it a very human discussion. So let's look now at two different passages in Chazal, and you'll notice that both people who are mentioned in both of these passages are the same. Both of them are Rabbi Yehoshua. So let's read number one. This is a story in Meseches Derech Eretz Rabbah. Amaymer Chazal, La'olam yu kol b'nei adam chashuvin lefanecha kilistim, behavim mechabdan k'rabbi Gamliel. Strange statement. You ever heard of the statement, Kabdeu v'chashdehu? Kabdeu v'chashdehu means, be nice to people, be generous to them, be respectful to them, but just be cautious. Don't be naive. Just be careful. This is where it comes from. Kabdeu v'chashdehu comes from this. It says, La'olam yu kol b'nei adam chashuvin lefanecha kilistim. It means you should be suspect of people. Be careful. However, havim echabdan k'rabbi Gamliel. Doesn't mean you shouldn't respect them, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to their opinions, and it doesn't mean that you shouldn't talk to them, and it doesn't mean you should not invite them into your home for a cup of coffee, but just be careful. How so? Maisa b'Rabbi Yeshua. Careful again, look at the word, Maisa b'Rabbi Yeshua. This is a story about the great Tana, Rabbi Yehoshua. Shehishkim etzlo adam v'nasalno achilo ushtia v'haleu legav lishkov. What happened was, Rabbi Yeshua is walking home one night, and on his way home, he sees somebody who's wandering around the streets, and he says, can I help you? You look like you're lost. He says, yes, I don't live here. I'm passing through the neighborhood. I need a place to stay. I need a place to sleep. I don't know where to go. He says, please come to my house. He gives him a whole meal. He takes care of him. After he's finished eating, he brings him up to the second floor, and he says, here's a very comfortable bed. We're happy to have you. Please make yourself comfortable. He sets him up. He gives him everything he needs. He says, and here's a coffee for the morning. Everything. He takes care of him. However, after he sets him up, he takes away the ladder. So he sets him up to go to sleep on the second floor, and he removes the ladder. Just so happens to be in the middle of the night, this guy actually was a bandit. He was a robber. So in the middle of the night, he takes the sheet from the bed that he was sleeping on. He goes around the second floor of the house, and he starts clearing out everything, puts it over his shoulder in the sheet, and he's planning on climbing down the ladder, leaving the house, and running away. He goes down to the ladder, not realizing that it's not there. He falls down, and he breaks his head. So the Gemara says, in the morning, Rabbi Yeshua goes to wake him up for Shachris. And he's surprised to see, hey, look who's here. And right next to this man is the sheet, together with all of his valuables from the second floor of the house. And says the Gemara, you should learn from Rabbi Yeshua to be mechabed people, give them a place to sleep, but take some caution, just be careful. Strange story. Let's look at the next story the Gemara has. That's what confused people. But let's look at the next story, and then I'll bring out the point. So the next story is the Gemara Maseches Shabbos Kuf Chav Zayin. And guess what? Lo and behold, it's also about Rabbi Yeshua. Tana Rabbanan. Pam achas hutzrach davar echad the Talmidei Chachamim etzol matronisa achas shekol gedolei romi mitzuyin etzla. There was a woman, matronisa achas means there was a woman, an aristocrat, who had a rapport with all of the very important people in the Roman government, and the rabbis at the time felt somebody needs to go talk to her. They needed to discuss something, negotiate something, they felt she can be helpful. So everybody's saying, well, who's going to go? I don't want to go. You don't want to go. Rabbi Yeshua says, I'll volunteer. I'll go speak to her. So he has a whole group of students who come and walk with him to this woman's home. He gets to the doorstep, and he tells all of his students, okay, you wait here, I'm going to go and talk to her. Before he walks into the house, it says, Chalat tfilin berachak arba amos v'nichnas. Takes off his tfilin before going in. So it looks a little suspicious. What are you taking your tfilin off? What do you plan to do in there? And it's just you and her together in the house, no one else there. Looks a little suspicious. Nichnas, he goes in. Vinal delas bifneim. He locks the door. Oh no, he's up to no good. Achar sheyatza, after he leaves the house, he starts asking around. Anybody know where the closest mikveh is? Yared v'tabel. He goes down the block to go to the mikveh. Okay, so all right, something just happened. And the students are like, something doesn't make sense here. He goes into the house, he takes his tefillin off, he goes to the mikveh after he's done. He was there in the house with the woman by himself. Something's not right. After that's on, Amar Lahami says, I have a question for all of you. You watched what just happened. When I took off my tefillin, b'macha shadatani, what did you think when I took my tefillin off? Amarnu, they said, kasavar, we thought, Rabbi lo yikansu divrei kedusha b'makom tuma, we thought, you didn't know if there was going to be Avodah Zarah in the house, so you were afraid, so you took your tefillin off, that the tefillin shouldn't have to be in the presence of the Avodah Zarah. Okay, very generous students. And when I locked the door, b'macha shadatani, what did you think when I locked the door and I left all of you outside? Amarnu, they said, shema dvar machas yesh bein ola beina. They thought maybe you're talking about some very important secrets that have to do with the Roman government, and you were afraid that the secrets would get out if all of us would hear. And b'shashi aradati v'tavalti, when I come out of the house, and I have this very strange encounter there, and now I go looking for the mikveh, what did you think then? Amarna, we said to ourselves, maybe the woman spit on your clothing by mistake while she was talking to you, and maybe she wasn't tahora. A whole story, they concocted a whole story. And he says to his Talmidim, I'm very proud, the same way you were able to be down the Kapschus in such a shady story that could have been interpreted a very different way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will treat you the very same way. So Rabbi Asher Weiss pointed out to me, this is the same Rabbi Yeshua. I don't understand. You hold your Talmidim to a standard, you should be down the Kapschus. And when you see me doing something as crazy as that, and as shady as what I did, I want all of you to assume that you shouldn't be suspicious of whatever it is that happened in that house. And at the same time, a guy comes to visit the same Rabbi Yeshua's house, and he takes the ladder away. What kind of Rabbi Yeshua is this? Is he bipolar? Chalila, right? What was wrong with him? What does he expect? So Rabbi Asher Weiss told me the following. Dan the Kapschus is an important midah. And we should judge others favorably. We should look objectively when we see other people doing something that we seem to think is wrong. But don't be an idiot. It doesn't mean you should be naive. So if you're looking in for a shidduch, and the closest friends of this person tell you, don't get near this family because X, Y, and Z, don't say, I'll be down the Kapschus, because who knows? You got to be smart. If somebody comes to you and wants to sell you a business, don't say, I'll be down the Kapschus because everyone's wonderful, and therefore I'll buy the business without looking into it. Don't be naive. Understand that you live in the reality of the world that we do, and although you should be respectful to other people, and you should be understanding to them, and although you should be down the Kapschus, and you should always look objectively at what other people are doing and never judge them, but when it comes to your life, when it comes to destroying your life, says the Gemara, don't take chances. And Rabbi Yeshua says, I'm willing to take the guy into my house, I'll give him plenty to eat and plenty to drink, I'll even give him a bed upstairs, I'll let him sleep in my house. But I'm not willing to take the risk that he's going to steal all of my property and he's going to leave me with nothing. That's not what Dan the Kapschus expects us to be able to do. Is that confusing to anybody? What's the confusion? I was confused that people were confused. So how do you draw the line? That's a very good question. How do you draw the line? Maybe that's where the confusion is. That's a very good question. How does a person know where to draw the line? It's complicated. But at the same time, I think it almost humanizes the halacha. And it says, yes, the Torah expects a standard and it demands dan l'kapschus, but the Torah also says, you should live. Don't destroy your life because of that. Don't just put your trust in everybody. Do your homework, do your research, and make sure before you engage in something that is a critical part of your life, a business deal, or investments, or a shidduch, or whatever it might be, choosing friends, do your homework. Do your homework and make sure you're not getting involved in something that is a very negative consequence to yourself, to your children, and to your community, possibly. Yes?
Even what Moshe said about the Maestro not believing him, mm-hmm. I personally don't think that was, he's being realistic.
If right.
He was being God like him, so if he punished that way, mm-hmm. but that was for him to lie, he was just being...
Right. So it's very interesting that you mention that, because the Netziv actually has a comment. It's written very short in the Netziv's comment on Chumash, but then he has a letter where he writes it in full, where he says, I don't understand why Moshe Rabbeinu assumed that they wouldn't believe him. He says, have you ever encountered a person who's in a real need? Someone who's in a real dire situation. Take, for example, someone who doesn't have children, and they've tried so many IVF cycles, and they've tried all the fertility clinics, and every specialist in the world, and now they're just at a point they feel there's nothing more to do. And somebody comes to them and tells them the most outrageous thing. Maybe this will help. If you take this and you wear this around your leg, maybe this, something that makes absolutely no medical sense, no, even the people who feel that, you know, you could do homeopathy, even they don't believe in this. How is it that a person who's otherwise extremely rational will go ahead and do something that's so silly that nobody really thinks can help? Says the Netziv, because when you're desperate, you'll listen to anybody. Doesn't matter what they tell you. And as much as you're a rational person in every other aspect of your life, you'll follow it here, even though it makes no sense to you when you take a step back and you think about it. So writes the Netziv in the opposite direction. The Jewish people were so desperate. I don't understand. Finally somebody comes and he says, guess what? God spoke to me. No one's going to believe you? Everyone's going to believe you. Says the Netziv, what was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking? No one's going to believe you? They'll hang on to anything. Somebody comes and gives them hope. Of course we'll listen to him. He tells us we should follow him out of Egypt. All right, I'm in. We'll try it. It's not going to be worse than what we have now. So the Netziv actually takes the question in the opposite direction.
So Moshe was almost implying that they weren't that desperate, that they wouldn't.
So it's a problem. Exactly how to understand that story is a good question. But he takes it, I thought it was interesting, in the other direction. Let me just make one final point on this, and that is the following. The Gemara talks in Maseches Yuma about the very contentious time, and we talk about this a lot in the past few months, of the Bayis Sheni. The Bayis Sheni wasn't as simple as it sounds. It was a beautiful Beis HaMikdash, and it says it was Gadol Kavod HaBayis HaZeh HaAchron Min HaRishon. The second Beis HaMikdash was even more beautiful than the first, and the grandeur, and everything was amazing. And yet, life was not so simple in the times of the second Beis HaMikdash. And they had the problems with the Tzedukim, and with all these other factions that started up in the Jewish community itself. And as we mentioned last week, many assume Yeshu HaNotzri started up with his Christianity right in the middle of the second Beis HaMikdash. There was a lot going on. And the Gemara tells us that in those days, the Kahuna Gedola was bought. It was corrupt. So the Kohen Gadol basically died every year on Yom Kippur, that's what it says, because he was unworthy of going to the Kodesh HaKadashim. And yet, even though that happened time and again, they still would pay to have the next guy put in. So the Gemara says they came up with a system. And that was Erev Yom Kippur, or Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol was about to go do his Avodah, they would grill him with questions. And they would ask him questions that really were able to identify whether or not he was part of the Tzeduki camp, or he was part of the Prushim. Was he one of us or not? And the Gemara there says in Maseches Yuma that they would ask all these questions, and it was painful. It was embarrassing to ask a person, you know, you come over to a person who comes to shul every day and keeps every Shabbos, you ask them, are you a Mechal Shabbos? They'll say, my Mechal, why are you even asking me such a question? What would make you think that I am? It's almost offensive. So the Gemara says there, the Kohen Gadol would start crying when they asked him these questions. You're asking me whether or not I'm subscribing to do the Avodah the way I'm supposed to? Of course. I'm a Kohen Gadol. Why would you think otherwise? And as he was answering all of their questions, he would start to cry. And the Gemara says they would also cry. The great Tzaddikim of the Sanhedrin who asked him the question would also cry. Why? Because unfortunately we need to ask these questions. We feel bad that we need to ask. You feel bad that you're being asked. But this is the reality. So Rab Chaim Balazhiner's son, his name was Rab Itzel of Balazhiner, he said, what happened to me down the Kav Schus? You have a Kohen Gadol who does his job honorably every day of the year. We have no reason to assume that he's doing anything wrong. So why suddenly do we stand up and grill him with questions and ask him all these uncomfortable things to the point that he starts crying and he's crying and we're crying? What a terrible scene. Why are we doing this? Why is he subject to all of this terrible interrogation? What happened to being down the Kav Schus? And he writes something that I think is so important and it's so relevant today as it always was. And he writes, the answer is, being down the kav schus is a very important character trait. And it's something we all need to learn to do. But he says when the Jewish people's future is on the line, down the kav schus is not an operative word. That is not the way to look at it. When we have so much on the line in Yom Kippur, and the Kohen Gadol who is holding the entire people on his shoulders is about to go in to do the avoda on behalf of all of us, there, writes Rabbi Yitzchak Valojiner, down the kav schus is not the way to go. We need to be so extra careful to make sure that when it comes to the future of the Jewish people, everything is done exactly the way it's supposed to be done. And if it means we need to ask uncomfortable questions, that's what needs to be done. We can't trust anybody with the future of the Jewish people. That's what Rabbi Yitzchak Valojiner taught us. And you can be the Kohen Gadol, going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with a great track record, but because we're talking about the future of Klal Yisrael, and you can adapt it however you'd like today, and I think it is very adaptable, one needs to be very, very careful who the Jewish community entrusts their future in. And yes, we have a beautiful principle of being down the kav schus, and it's something we should all learn to do a little bit better, myself perhaps more than others. You have to be careful about how you view other people, and when you have information that comes your way, how you process it and what you do with it and what image you draw of others. But here, says Rabbi Yitzchak Valojiner, that's all nice, but not when it comes to the future of Klal Yisrael. When we have issues on the table that are going to determine what the future of the Jewish people will look like and which direction our community as a whole will go in, that is not a place to say, well, he's such a nice person and they all meant well and everything's great and let's all get along and let's be wonderful together. It's true. All of those are wonderful values that we should all live by, but not when it's at the expense, potentially, of the future of Klal Yisrael. So, Amir Tashem, next week, we will...